And we're going to go into the realm of X. There's something about X. There's just something about X in of itself. Just that name or reference is just, it's like cool and scary at the same time. I don't know. Let me bring in here Sam Maranto, the co-host, our resident paranormalist, paranormalist, and ufologist.
You used a 20 pound word today. What was the one? Whatever.
Ostracized?
No, the longer version of it.
I don't know.
It was good. I was like, that came out of his mouth, and he's able to say it all. That's very good. I was impressed.
So we bring Sam in here for some additional insight and with his experience in UFOs and also in the study of paranormal. Gosh, I said that word 100 times. Paranormalist, our resident paranormalist. There we go. He's been studying the paranormal for so many years that we have both in one person, we have UFOs and paranormal. So it's great to have you back again, Sam.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. And on my realm, it's like, if it's normal, that's paranormal.
That's right. Well, that's what it's turning to. I mentioned in the beginning there that just normal, it just doesn't cut it anymore. It's not answering things. We have to go to the paranormal.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you one thing. We're getting our education on X. And the funny thing about X, as far as a letter in the, it's a letter that has some sort of regal or powerful tones to it. If you were to do some research on the letter X, X has certain supposedly some sort of powers into it. In fact, those individuals that change their name with to a name with an accident. X in it usually find themselves, their egos more elevated, better things happening to them, whatever. This is supposedly one thing about X, but X in this scenario, of course, means the 10th planet. And speaking of the 10th planet and planet X, we're really blessed to have a great guy and excellent author, and who's written another magnificent book that I've had the privilege to read. Mark Hazelwood.
Mark.
Hey, Mark, you there?
I'm here. Thank you so much. It's an honor to have made it onto your show.
Oh, well, it's an honor
really
to have you.
I really appreciate it.
I'm looking right now at your website, and I see that Delicate Planet is that book, if I'm correct.
Delicate Earth.
Delicate Earth. Okay.
Delicate Earth, because it is delicate. It can very easily and very regularly, does it go through mega changes, at least the surface of it.
Yes, and we've had on this discussion of Planet X, we've noticed that things have happened that have changed. The Earth has turned different poles and everything. And lo and behold, in the world we find green grass up in Siberia, and there was water once in Egypt. And we have a bunch of stuff that kind of goes along with this, and yet somehow this Planet X theory is just so strange to the world. I think perhaps people either don't want to know, or the ones who do know don't want it known.
You hit it square on the head both times. There's actually ancient ruins of cities off the coastlines of every continent all over the world. So that should give some indication that dramatic changes happen on this world.
And it's been kind of recently when it just kind of dawned on scientists, or at least the ones that will open their eyes, hey, wait a minute, so let's go out and start looking around. And we hear ancient legends, so let's go out in those ancient legend areas. And you have off the coast of Japan, you have by Cuba. We're finding them more and more. In fact, I just slipped my mind. Somebody just sent me an email today with yet another city they were exploring. I think it's off China, if I recall. So, I mean, this is really just another explanation, or another evidence of catastrophic events that have happened, and for that something to happen, they have to have external influence.
Yeah, there's nothing natural that goes on Earth itself that would cause these changes. The tectonic plates moving are simply settling from past celestial events. Whether they be impact events or just passing by can cause mega changes, which is something that most of the major media will never mention, that a simple comet passing by can cause mega-Earth changes to the point of tearing a continent apart or running underneath the ocean. I mean, this is just in addition to weather changes that would be, I mean, would make it look like we're in a hurricane constantly for a few weeks.
So now, we you know, a lot of people here have are it's new to Planet X, and they've had a couple of guests here, so they got the idea that there is a planet that has out there that comes by close. It's but I'd like you to explain to me, it's not really a planet, it's a kind of a planet, and why does it come back and forth through here and cause all kind of nasty stuff?
All right, well, before I get into that, let's... You mentioned looking at my website. Might as well mention the website, so if a couple other people want to be looking at it while I'm talking about it, they can. It's real simple, planetxinbound.com.
And we have a link right up there on the website for those who are there. They just click it and go there. But okay.
Okay. Yeah. Planet X, I mean, that is a term that has been used in the astronomical community to just denote any planet out there that's an extra planet. But there is a specific Planet X that has been named from several ancient cultures. In fact, the first book I wrote, Blindsetter, has some, 35 names for it, depending on the culture it came from. Nibiru would be one that would probably be one of the most popular ones. That translates into planet of passing, because this planet, it comes through our solar system and simply passes through. It doesn't orbit the orbital plane with the other nine planets. It actually is orbiting back and forth between two suns. The average solar system has been found out to have two suns. And our solar system happens to be average. Our second sun happens to be dark, so that it is not a piece of information that a lot of people are familiar with. I mean, there is an encyclopedia one can go to their local library and see a diagram of this second sun and the dwarf, which is Planet X, that orbits back and forth between it. And that would be the 1987 through 1989 edition of the New Science and Invention Encyclopedia, Volume 18 under Space Probes, the first two space probes we sent out, Pioneers 10 and 11, actually triangulated these two objects, our dark star twin sun and then Planet X, or the 10th planet. And since then, we've found out through some very sophisticated equipment we've thrown up into space that most solar systems are just like ours. They have two suns, except I suppose most of the second suns, the twins, would be lit as opposed to ours. And they have a dwarf, which is simply kind of a cross between a planet and a sun, a failed sun, if you would, that'll never ignite. And these can be, various sizes. And they usually, these dwarves usually orbit back and forth around the two suns in the binary system. So there you have it. That's the average solar system. We're average. It's not the second sun that we're worried about, because that always stays out there, a very good distance, maybe some 50 billion miles away from us. It's this half-brother of ours that shares our space when it comes through our side of the solar system every, let's say, 3,650 years, that is a bit worrisome when it comes through, because it happens to cause what is known as surface changes or earth changes on the majority of the planets in our solar system when it comes through. It doesn't strike anything, but it brings a lot of objects with it, an entourage of other objects that come well before it, during, afterwards, and some of those can be impact objects. And when they start to come through, as they have last year to the point of, the number of hundreds that have come through from the one direction that it is coming from, the southern hemisphere, they cause our sun to go completely crazy. I mean, we're supposed to be in a solar minimum right now, and we're at a maximum that we've never seen prior in modern history, the amount of solar activity, which is causing the so-called global warming that the major media wants to blame on us, but has nothing, it has very little to do with us. Our dirty little civilization is going through global warming. Our planet's going through global warming. It has nothing to do with our dirty little civilization, or very little to do. And at the same time, Mars is going through global warming, and where is the civilization there that would be causing global warming? I mean, and there's surface changes happening on all the planets just during the approach of this larger object, this dwarf, and its entourage coming through, and the electrical magnetic exchange that's having between all the planets and these objects passing through.
Speaking of the entourage, one interesting visitor was Comet Neat, and that was actually in the NASA was saying that was basically a half mile big when it was right next to the sun, and obviously it was substantially larger, and that had been about the size of the moon or the size of a small planet or something like that.
You could see this object with the naked eye next to the sun. I mean, it may have been only 1 or 5 million miles away from the sun, but we could see it with our naked eyes here some, you know, 87 or 90 million miles away. For us to be able to do that, to take a photograph of it by the sun when it was going down, which people did at that time, it had to have been huge, had to have been at least the size of our moon. And it should have been as popular as Hale-Bopp coming through. By the way, Hale-Bopp was another object, a very large object that was downplayed by NASA. They said they didn't even take a picture of it, if you can imagine that. And this object was one of the entourage coming up from the southern hemisphere that accompanies its bigger brother when prior to it coming in. And any one of these objects, if they pass close enough to us, could cause major Earth changes, not just the big one coming through.
You know, what's interesting is when you look at space weather site, the amount of comets that have been spotted jumped, I think it was 7 in the last day or so, as far as new objects actually being seen. So they're starting to post them slowly but surely, but by the time we see them, generally it's about, what, a day or so afterwards, or sometimes a month later they tell you about it?
Well, occasionally they'll, you know, catch them 2 or 3 days ahead of time, but for every one object that we see, there are at least 10 other objects coming from the same direction that we don't see that are passing by.
And that's one of the things that really got me going on this, because, as I'm growing up, I was really into astronomy. I mean, not in a professional sense, but observational, recreational.
Right.
And a comet coming was this huge deal, you know. And now there's comets hitting the sun, and you're just like, no one's saying anything. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, and they're not identifying the connection between these objects passing by the sun, hitting the sun, and the massive solar flares that happen at the same time. They will not draw the connection because they don't want the public to be informed of that connection. It's really rather simple. Comets come through. In your backyard, you might have a bug zapper, okay? When a bug comes in, it discharges the electrical field, right, and kills the bug. That's exactly what's happening on the sun. These objects discharge the field and cause these major solar flares, which are contributing, are the major cause of our global warming and our massive change in weather lately. I mean, the most prestigious world-renowned weather reporting agency, World Meteorological Organization, made an unprecedented announcement last year saying the world's weather has just gone crazy, and identified a long list of what exactly has happened. I mean, just last year we had, 20,000 people die in Europe because of the heat that was going on. I mean, that was just one of a long list of things that was happening. And the weird weather the crazy weather we're having now is now normal because of these objects coming through. And there's the connection that they will not draw. They will not connect the dots for you.
Because,
they want you to know this.
Well, we can go through the obvious reason would be that if they came out and said, by the way, in 2 years or 3 years or, you know, a year or 2 months, we're going to possibly be turned on our side and all that's going to happen. It would be just world pandemonium.
Yeah, it would pretty much collapse the markets of the world. People wouldn't want to go to work. They wouldn't want to pay their credit cards. And, you know, they can, I suppose, they can justify their position by saying, well, just because there's ecological evidence and much archaeological evidence and past cultures that have written about this object when it comes through, and we have sighted it and we know it's coming our way, doesn't mean the same thing will happen again. I guess that's their justification. You know, and they would be right. They don't know exactly that this is going to happen again, as has happened time and time again in the past. I don't know. I just figure they're just scared. I mean, these guys are real paranoid that this stuff is going to get out to the public. They've done everything from ban the books I've written and Professor James McKinney's books to creating websites of their own that just bash the messengers as opposed to deal with the science and create all kinds of lies. I mean, everything they can do to quash this information, but I suppose that's their job, and who am I to fault them for it, right? I'm on the other side of the field, though, so I've got to comment on it.
But, it makes sense that the people who are running things, the big governments, they are prepared with underground cities. I mean, this is not science fiction. They are there for back from the Cold War days. There are preparations that they can take when things happen like this. And naturally, there's not enough room for everybody. And if we go back to one of my favorite movies, the George Pell movie, When Worlds Collide, it pretty much sums it up. The person who said that there was a planet coming was called a nut. But then when it was obvious it was too late and there was a planet coming, it was just worldwide pandemonium.
Well, there you go. You hit it right on the head there. They know they can't help everyone. They don't have the resources to help everyone, so they've been getting ready themselves for decades. They actually announced having found this object back in the early 80s, and then they backtracked. It was
December
30th or 31st, 1983. The chief scientist of the IRAS satellite announced they'd found this object out there. And then from that point on, the report got into six dailies, including the Washington Post, New York Times. But after that, they backpedaled. It's like, you know, one hand didn't know what the other hand was doing, I guess.
So then they
really understood the history behind what this object does when it comes through.
I think they figured it out, and that's what the problem is.
That's why they said, uh-oh, we better keep this to ourselves. No use causing the public undue stress. We're not going to be able to help them anyway. Let's just help ourselves and stay quiet.
All right, we got to stop for a break here, and we'll be back with Mark Hazelwood, Sam Maranto. This is going to be a fascinating talk here, and we're not trying to scare anybody. We're just trying to inform people and make you make your decisions. And then get ready. We're live. We're back for hour two. Having fun here, talking about Planet X. I want to say hi to people who are in the iVisit room. I've got that on, and it seems to be working. I have strict requirements here for broadcasting, but I am in there. iVisit room, the Feet the Fire room. I see PJ Live is there and Lily. So if you guys are out there and want to come in and say hi, we can do that. Also, we have the chat rooms. The chat systems are open to chat. And we're going to bring back our guest. Hello, Sam.
Hello.
You guys are having a nice talking, no doubt. Sam,
he loves
breaks.
I love this.
Breaks are
great. We have such a good time talking.
Yeah, he has his own little personal type of thing here. So now we're at the website, planetxinbound.com, and I see a book, Planet X in 2003, Earth Changes. And you can tell us about that first book. What's about that book?
Well, when I first became aware of the subject matter and I found out the reality of it, I pulled together, you know, the best information I could find at the time. And the best information was pointing towards a passage in 2003. And there could be two reasons for this. Number one, it could have been and certainly has been used from a couple different sources as a disinformation date. In other words, well, since it didn't pass then, it won't pass, so ignore the situation. Otherwise, there's another side of it, and that is people trying to figure out how fast this thing would come and speed up and come through the solar system was not aware of the Professor James McKinney's work as far as how objects move once they enter into a solar field. They develop a cometary tail, and it's this tail that causes these objects to move erratically. They can slow them down, speed them up. No one really knows how to predict, you know, how these objects are going to move once they develop these cometary tails. So that deals with the 2003 issue. That updated version of the first text that I wrote actually has a question mark behind the 2003 date, because at that point when I updated the book, I certainly did not know and didn't claim to know exactly when it was going to pass through. Now, if you go to my website, there's a couple buttons on top. One is called Timing. I don't claim to know when this comet is, or this object is going to come through now, but there are two triple doctorates that discuss this issue under that timing button. And they coincide during the 2006-2007 time frame. Now, that doesn't mean just because they overlap with their time frames, that means it's coming absolutely then. I mean, if they're getting past information about what is known, let's say one of them was past information some 10 years ago or 8 or 9 years ago, and the latest triple doctorate that I spoke with personally, who called me up, was past information back in the springtime of 2002, this object could have changed as far as slowing down or speeding up. And in fact, the second triple doctor, I spoke to him again after the springtime of 2002, some 7 or 8 months later, and he did say that the object had slowed down and speeded up since then, so it is acting like it should. It's acting like one of the lawless ones, which is how some of the ancient cultures talked about these larger objects with cometary tails that came through. They could not predict even exactly how they were going to come through. They would change direction like Hale-Bopp did from moment to moment, from day to day. Hale-Bopp was said to have come through 3 months prior to when it did, according to NASA's best calculation. So NASA didn't even know.
No,
NASA knows how to calculate an object's speed and trajectory whenever it has a cometary tail that is driving it somewhat.
Well, you know, that's a good point, because when I watched for Hale-Bopp, what was that comet that came in the 80s?
Shoemaker-Levy?
No, it was the...
No, that was early 90s. And that,
yeah, I'm forgetting. It slipped. Maybe it was the 70s. There was the name is slipping. I'm bad with names. A comet was coming. Everybody's getting all excited, and then he could barely see it. And that explains why, well, you know, that's how they planned it, but then when the actual comet, which does move around, until it actually passes you, you really don't know exactly where and when it's going to pass.
That's the deal here. What they do know is what has happened when it's come through before, and they've been getting ready for that for a few decades, you know, building the underground cities that you mentioned. And this is not just the United States. This is all over.
Now, Russia is a little more loose-lipped as far as explaining things, and the scientific community isn't shackled as bad as they are here. Can you give us some insight on that?
Well, I think they have the largest, and they've just been very out front with it, like we have not been here. They have the largest underground areas, supposedly, that would be safe, that they've built that could hold, I don't know how many, several million people, the largest one in the world. So it's obvious they're getting ready for something. And they've even started to mention, I remember seeing a billboard that was talking about, or had a picture of this incoming planet that was coming in. We may be one of the least informed countries in the world when it comes to these objects. an insider was discussing, having read about Planet X back in 2002, it was the January issue of Free America magazine, and he said he was shocked to see it here, but had seen it talked about overseas on a number of different occasions, but it was the first time that he saw it mentioned here, and he confirmed being one of these insider black ops people that the majority of the government and the military is aware of this object coming in, but there's certainly no reason to bring it public, because what good would it do, since they don't have the resources to protect everyone? They might as well just let everyone just live their lives in peace without this knowledge. Oh, that was their decision anyway. I don't necessarily agree with it.
That was Kamek Kahotek, one of our listeners, typed in.
Okay, Kahotek. That was okay.
Because I was so excited about that, and then it was just nowhere. And I remember at the time thinking, well, how could they possibly screw this up? They know when the planets are going to be here, and they know all this stuff, stars moving, and yet they miscalculated so poorly. And then here this theory comes in and explains it quite well.
Yeah, It suffice to say that they know, they've been viewing it for quite some time, and they know approximately when it'll come. That's about it. And they aren't going to let loose with it, although because of my work, I've gotten a few insiders to do some research and let me know what they found out. But that doesn't mean that that information doesn't change from month to month, and, you know, it's maybe off by a few months here, or a year or two there. Who knows exactly? I know the Bible mentions it. They call it wormwood. And I think they even state in that book that it should be the way it's supposed to happen. Only God knows the exact date. And maybe that's true.
It's supposed to come like a thief in the night.
That's it. You got it. That's the quote I was looking for.
And that's what... Well, go ahead, Sam.
An interesting thing was when was it Hale-Bopp or was it Kahotek when it came in that they being the Vatican, actually had asked if that was wormwood?
Yeah. Yeah, it was Hale-Bopp.
It was Hale-Bopp.
Yeah. Now, the Indians, Native American Indians here in the United States, some of their cultures are fully aware of these objects, and one they call the Red Kachina and the Blue Kachina. And I think it's the red one that hasn't come yet. That's the bigger brother or something. Maybe I'm getting mixed up with two.
Well, that's pretty interesting, though, that when you think about some of these movies, like I mentioned this movie, When Worlds Collide, and you mentioned the Indian writings, it could be very possible that we have two events. You have the entourage, a collision or near collision with one of the larger entourage, and then the actual... dwarf itself, which will pass near, I guess, or whatever. But it seems like my whole point of looking for these truths is that when you have all these diverse and ancient and modern sources all in the ballpark, just because they're not on the same day, minute, you got to cut them some slack. I mean, if all these people are coming all these times and they come within the ballpark, it's like, I'm very interested.
Well, they're... You know, it's strange, even though I'm very much into the science and history aspect of this subject now. Originally, I got interested in because of prophecy. And back in the 60s, I suppose, as a child, I was introduced to Edgar Cayce's Earth Change Prophecy. And I kind of developed an interest in that kind of prophecy and found some 100 different ancient myths or modern-day prophets talking about these same things that's supposed to happen sometime around the turn of the century, that kind of thing. They all coincided saying the same thing. I've since discovered there are actually thousands of different myths or prophecies from every culture all over the world that have said the same thing. Now, this certainly isn't the scientific aspect of it, but it's interesting also to note that there are people all over the world, everywhere, that... fall into the paranormal and are having dreams of this or have had their entire life. And hundreds, if not a couple thousand over the years, have sent me these dreams and told me what they've seen for the future. That side of it is kind of scary when you put it together with the science and the history and what we're experiencing now today with the Earth changes, the so-called global warming, the reason for that.
Funny thing about prognosticators, they're all crazy until something happens.
Yeah.
They're a genius, you see?
You're right.
And that's how it works.
Well, that's why I like this. That's why my second book, I've carved most all of the prophecy, and I mean, there's maybe one small mention of it, out of it, and simply dealt with the science, the best researchers out there. I've let them speak.
Well, let's hit some of those. Let's say, okay, let's start out with, I got the book, with book in hand, mind you.
Delicate Earth?
Yes, I have it in my hand. Let's say, first of all, let's start out with government agencies. That information that you could trust that came to you, first of all, Harrington did announce it. It was spotted. It's actually in text in numerous books.
That was the head of the Naval Observatory that had identified this object back in the late 80s, wrote several papers on it. He is very renowned as far as what he knew about it, and I believe that was the reason why he met an untimely death. He was too verbal about it, and I guess didn't listen to people telling him to not talk about his favorite subject.
I mean, that's another thing that amazes me is how the government agencies would listen in and catch these people. It's like when they've done a very good job of painting all these people as being nuts or whatever, trying to sell items, being crazy, and yet they still are really interested. To me, that they're just shooting themselves in the foot by if they were really, everybody was really nutty or just creative entrepreneurs, they would just ignore them.
Well, I think if you look at the number of PhDs that have contributed to the body of information that shows the existence of this object and put them all together, you can't ignore it. I mean, it's just the reality of what is. I mean, like I said before, we're in an average solar system. This is what happens. Our half-brother comes in every few thousand years and disrupts the solar system. And it goes on its way and comes back again in another 3,650 years. And along the way, there could be all kinds of other objects that come in, like Emanuel Velikovsky wrote about the latest addition to our solar system, which was the planet Venus. That was one of the entourage of Planet X that came in the previous passage just some 3,650 years ago. I know, the astronomical community wants everyone to believe that 4.5 billion years ago all the planets were suddenly there, but that's not the way it works. I mean, a solar system starts with two large objects, and then it captures these other cometary objects that come in, and they become planets, and slowly the solar system changes, and it evolves, and it continues like that indefinitely. It doesn't just suddenly appear and nothing happen. It's almost ridiculous to think about.
Now, I have a pet theory that I've put in about this Planet X. I, too, have studied prophecy. And one of the keys is that people will be surprised. Now, with everybody screaming Planet X, I would think, just like using Noah as the case, whether it be literal or whether it be a story giving information, you had Noah preaching his head off for, it was 100 years, 70 years prior to rain, which never happened before, and people laughed at him. Well, my guess is that when people are talking about Planet X, it's going to come later than they're predicted. And that will be the surprise. It will come. It just might be a little bit later than people thought.
Well, there's not a lot of people that are Planet X aware or even Planet X interested, even if they've heard it. I mean, it is kind of an obscure subject in a society that wants to view fast food and play with their TiVo. I mean, their cable TV that can rewind and fast forward and such. I mean, where are the readers? Where are the people that are actually interested in this kind of thing? Unless it's affecting their life currently, unless it's at their doorstep, the interest is very low. And this was made very clear to me when I was rather adamant about telling telling this to everyone when I first found out about it.
Well, that's true.
Some really kind of nice, bright people just told me, listen, I'm not really interested, even if it's true, all of it, right now, because I have my bills to pay, you know, I have my life to live right now, and I can't be concerned with something that's not at my doorstep, it's not affecting me currently in my life this second.
Well, you know, that's true, and that's where we get back to more of the prophecy where you talk about the vigilant or the faithful will be known, not necessarily faithful in any particular religion, but those who are here, heed the clues and watch it and prepared, they are the ones who will be, if I can use the word spared, I mean, everyone's going to have to deal with this catastrophe, but the people who are listening, reading your books, listening to these stations and seminars, those people will be aware. Now, they still have to take action, but nonetheless, they'll be aware, and then it will it'll happen.
Well, you know, I have my own personal philosophy, I'd like to say, about this situation. I'm not really all that concerned about it. I mean, I'm certainly aware of what it does in the past. I think there's a good chance it'll do the same thing it has done in the past. But, just to give you a little insight into me personally, which doesn't necessarily mean other people think like this. I think if you're meant to go, you can't move to the next valley to get away from the angel of death. It'll find you. And by the same token, if you are, you know, partying on a beach somewhere waiting for those tidal waves to come in and it's not your time, divine intervention, alien intervention, something will prevent you from perishing if it's not your time. That's the way I think. So I don't really take a great concern in deciding for people what they should do about it. I just put the information out and let other people decide how they should deal with it. And I don't suggest people run around in fear of this situation. I mean, if it causes one to have fear, I think you should ignore it, really. I mean, this isn't the type of thing where you should listen to it and go into a state of fear. That's not helpful. It never has been. Fear has never helped anyone in that respect. I think, on the other hand, you know, a little healthy dose of fear is maybe a good idea. I mean, let's say I right now am one of the worst spots possible on a peninsula, in the middle of a peninsula of Florida. It's the Orlando area. That would probably be one of the worst spots, the quickest spots to go, given, you know, a shift in the Earth's crust because of the water coming in and covering the state. I mean, it's all just basically at water level almost. If I saw the thing with my eyes coming, knew it was coming, was in the sky, you know, just days away from whatever catastrophe that may come about, I would more than likely make my way up to northern Alabama, which is the closest place to here that could possibly be a safe area. You know, be high enough away, high enough as far as elevation goes, and far enough away from the shorelines of the East Coast and the Gulf.
We had
but they could close the roads, so who knows?
But speaking of elevation, I keep hearing the figure of 2,100 feet. That or a good surfboard may do it.
Yeah, I heard that from this guy who, for whatever reason, called me up and thanked me for my information. He happened to be a triple doctor. He lives down here in Florida. And right outside of Boston, he got to attend a rather hush-hush secretive meeting where 24 other people at the Boston Science Museum, May 23rd, 2002, got to view two extrasolar objects. There are many extrasolar objects, and Planet X is just one of them. It just happens to be the one that comes around on a regular basis. But there was one called KX something, I don't know if it's 2001, KX76, something like that. And then they all got to view Planet X via a live Hubble link-up, which is not something the public is even aware of or would be exposed to at all. And he just 100% confirmed when he first got on the phone and ended the phone call after 10 minutes repeating those two words, 100% confirmed. Anyway, the reason I brought this guy up, the second triple doctor besides Malachi Martin, is because he mentioned being above 2,100 feet. I don't know where his research came up with that, but it's the same number.
I mean, it sounds like it'd be for the splash, if you will, of the oceans. that figure might be, you'd be up high enough away from the commotion going on there.
I don't know. You know, if you're right next to the ocean, you're up 100 feet, and a tidal wave comes in, I don't think you're going to be too safe. You have to be inland somewhat, of course.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that, you know, that's why you'd have to go to a mountain, which are inland, or not too many on your side. But that way, when that splash comes in, I guess it's still, I mean, let's face it. I mean, no matter what you do, it's going to be a ride.
Yeah. From what I understand, you know, if this thing goes down the way it has in the past, I don't have to qualify that because I don't know exactly what will happen. No, nobody does. Or exactly when, but, you know, if it goes down the way it has in the past, it's water that you have to be more concerned about than anything else. And here we live in a world with 90% of the population within, you know, 50-100 miles of the shoreline all around the world.
We do have email that came in from a listener, Lazarus, who's been interested in the year 2012 in tying in with this, and he did some calculations. And again, these numbers aren't exact, so we have these 10 and 20-year kind of waverances. But you have, starting back at 12,589 B.C., the Ice Age, and then these are going to be all increments of about 3,600. You got 89008 within the 10,000 year of the last Ice Age, and then 5,268 within the 7,000 year of the Great Flood. And then you have 1628 Minovian civilization destroyed. And looking forward from these dates, he's looking at a 2012 and a Yellowstone.
Well, I would be very wary of the that date, 2012. It's bantered about quite a bit from the people who really kind of like to cover this thing up. I think it's a little outside, to tell you the truth.
Well, yeah, then you have to bring in the case that the 2012, if you take in a Gregorian calendar into consideration, it could be as early as 204, I've heard it said, the actual 2012 date.
Anyone who's done any sort of study in relation to the difference between the Gregorian calendar and the Mayan calendar knows they do not coincide, and the difference could be as much as anywhere from 2 to 12 years off.
Right.
So if you're trying to follow the Mayan calendar to some specific date of 2012 and think you found the date of Planet X, think again. Also, the end of time is what the Mayans were identifying in 2012, and it turns out that it's the Earth changes themselves that promote what you call a quickening or a spiritual awakening, and it takes a few years for the spiritual awakening to catch hold and cause a change in consciousness to the point where we would reach the end of time as we know it. So with those two things in mind, I would, take 2012 and just throw it into the pot with 2003, you know. Don't go along completely with it.
Yeah, well,
keep your eyes open.
That's
when the signs are there, it'll be obvious.
Right.
And that's my point of this, is not coming up with a date, because if you go by prophecy, no one will know the date, but they can see the season. And boy, there's a season of comets and Earth changes out there.
I would fully expect 3 months prior to this thing coming, all hell is going to wreak havoc with the Earth's weather. I mean, it's just going to be phenomenal what's going to happen. And the quake situation is going to be going off the scale, and there's going to be more volcanoes than you ever thought about going off. And this is just during their approach. That would be my suspicion.
All right, we're on the phone here with Mark Hazelwood and Sam Maranto. We're talking Planet X. And we'll be right back. Well, assuming it doesn't come by now. All right, we're back live here. Feet to the Fire. We have Sam and Mark online here. Let me bring you in there. You guys there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if, you know, the audience there has got their feet warm yet.
Oh, they are. And I'm getting comments both jovially and seriously. A lot of people realize that this is real, but have to deal with it in a jovial way, like when it comes, it'll make a big noise, and you know they're doing jokes or whatever. But if I could take a moment to ask, can you give any clue, being this son of Lee Hazelwood, to that song Phaedra, Sun Velvet Morning?
Come again? What was the question?
You can give us any insight to your father's song, the Sun Velvet Morning? We just played that on a break. It, and Phaedra and all that stuff. You haven't had
the Phaedra question.
You want me to address the Phaedra part
yeah.
of it?
Yeah.
Well, Phaedra was a name that he simply, I guess, found and liked and put into the song. And then along the way, he got married to a second woman in his life, broke up with her. That didn't last too long. But here's the clincher. He raised his second wife's daughter from the age of, I don't know, 3 or 4. So that daughter became his daughter. I mean, was no blood, but as far as she goes and everyone in the family goes, she's just his daughter, right? Now, his daughter is about as old as my son, or a year old, 24, 23, and has her own daughter. And she named her daughter Phaedra. So the fantasy in the song became a reality in his life. And this little girl is just a gorgeous little 4 or 5 year old girl. You can't get enough being around her. I visited her. She visited here in Orlando where my dad lives over the Christmas holidays.
But the name is so cool. I mean, I don't know how it came up, but it is just incredible.
Yeah, it is.
I bet.
But then again, he is incredible.
Say what?
He is incredible.
He's
done some remarkable, really remarkable work, and still doing interesting things, right?
Yeah, he's in the process of creating a new CD right now. I don't know how long it'll take him, but he was taken to the reservations as a child by his full-blooded Cherokee grandmother, and we just figure that somehow or other these Indian spirits speak to him in the nighttime or all the time. Who knows what's going on inside his head? Because he doesn't discuss paranormal like a lot of people of our generation. I don't know. I'm in my late 40s, but he doesn't discuss it. But it seems like he lives it constantly somehow.
We are talking here with Mark Hazelwood, and I want everybody who's by a computer can go to planetxinbound.com. And you can kind of keep along what we're doing here. That's the website and the new book that's out, which is on the website. We have the first one, Blindsided, and the second one. Oh, I clicked on it. Clicked on Blindsided. There we go. Delicate Earth, both of which are available on the website. And so on this Delicate Earth, I imagine you are going along the same paths. I have not read it yet. Will do so. And it... it's rather fascinating that most people think of Earth as being so stable, and yet it is very delicate.
Oh, jeez, it is extremely delicate. It's like it's blowing in the wind in the wilds of the solar system, and we've been given a con job that things only change gradually on this planet. Well, that's true between the cataclysms. They change slowly.
Yeah, and sure, if you have a small meteorite hitting the Earth or whatever, it's fine. It's not going to do anything. But when we're talking about the size of Planet X, and I've heard many different sizes of that planet, what can you add to that as far as the...
Well, Dr. Harrington and actually Van Flandern at the same time was actually discussing openly Planet X. He now denounces it because of his colleague's death. I think he's kind of reversed himself and line with the cover-up. But back then, they calculated it was 3 to 5 times as large as Earth, but many times, maybe 20 to 25 times, it would be a dwarf, which would be a lot denser than a planet, kind of along the lines of a star, but not quite a star. But any one of its entourage, smaller objects the size of the moon, could wreak havoc with the Earth. I mean, just like Venus did passing by, I think it was passing by every 52 years as it was settling into its orbit. It caused the major cataclysms throughout the entire world. Just passing by, I mean, I'm talking about an impact here. And compared to Planet X, it was a very small object.
But it's very dense, and that's for people who understand a little bit about the physics behind it. It's not the size of an item, it's the heaviness, which is why you have someone who may be small but very muscular, they carry a mass that it's hard to deal with, and this is
well,
a very
it's
heavy...
Just like humans. Humans have an electromagnetic field all around. It goes around about 15 feet all around their body. Well, these planets have gigantic electromagnetic fields, and its field is interacting with our solar system field right now, causing all kinds of changes. So it's not just how dense it is, it's the electromagnetic interplay between the objects that that are causing changes now and will cause more acute changes as it passes. I mean, there was a moon, I think it was just in the late 90s, that they saw was etching the electromagnetic, it was like a gigantic lightning bolt that was stationary, actually, is moving slightly, etching a groove into the surface of the planet. This would be what I'm talking about here. This could happen as it passes by. There could be these huge electrical connection that is made that virtually vaporizes everything it touches on the surface of the planet as it moves about and passes. In fact, you know, some people believe that the Grand Canyon was created in this way, not because of slow erosion from a river. It just happened to be there afterwards.
Now, we saw a comet that passed through the sun. It came very close to it, and there was a plasma discharge right directly at that a comet, and of course SOHO went down, so we weren't able to see it. But
well, SOHO, they didn't turn it off fast enough, and that when Comet Neat came by February 18, 2002, which should have made as much news and been as popular as Hale-Bopp was, which is large as it was, and what it did when it came through. But it was, the information was totally covered up for the most part, except for, you know, if you were watching SOHO or on the internet and a few obscure sites, and you know, NASA tried to play it down, saying it was a small object, but the largest solar flare ever observed, is what you were talking about, happened when it passed the sun 5 million miles away from it. I mean, this huge solar flare came and hit its tail, and it went out 5 million miles all the way out to touch this object. I mean, again, it was the bug that discharged the capacitor on the surface of the sun and caused it to create this electrical interplay between the two objects.
And I've seen this with my own eyes, these pictures, and nothing on the news. So that's for the people.
Well, I'll tell you what happened on the news. Very shortly thereafter, they announced that people should be ready for any kind of major, sort of an earth change event or weather event that they were referring to. But it was obviously because they did not know what was going to come of this solar flare, whether it was going to break up this object and send it our direction and cause any sort of calamities that it could have caused here if that would have happened. At a certain point, they didn't know. They were looking at it themselves. They did their best to try to warn the public to be ready for something or other. And then nothing happened, so it died down. And for the most part, most people didn't know why they announced such a thing and never heard about Comet Neat.
You know what's funny is that electrical discharge was also seen, an electrical discharge at Mercury. Was like a huge lightning bolt when Neat went by.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. And know what's interesting also is there are places, there. In fact, there's one in, there's a location in, in North Africa, in the desert, where it's actually like a layer of glass, where it was the sand was superheated to such a high level that it turned into glass. And there's also, or there's multiple locations across the Earth. So where electrical discharge at some point in time could have done this, that or else a nuclear explosion. And then the other thing is Mars has some interesting characteristics that could very well have been
caused by a discharge when the entourage came through, or when Tiamat was whacked, or one thing or the other.
Tiamat being the older name for possibly this planet Earth,
yeah,
prior to a cataclysmic.
Well, my take, and I don't know what, but from what I'm, and I'm sure we probably share the same take on that, is Tiamat, the Earth may, it seems as though it was the, it was what, a chunk of what was Tiamat and the rest of it becoming the asteroid belt.
That's what I've heard. I don't know how you can confirm this thing, except for if you ever got to look at a rendition of what Earth looks like without water. It looks like a bad wreck, especially in the Pacific Ocean. It looks like a recovering gigantic wound there.
It's very deep.
And if you were to take the outer edge of that, probably much of that would be the Ring of Fire, where we get the most amount of volcanic activity, where it's most active and healing.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's still healing from the last time it came by, those many thousands of years.
Yeah, that's what the Professor James McKinney says, that all the events, earthquake events and volcanoes that are going off now, are simply the settling from past celestial events that didn't happen millions of years ago, but just a few thousand.
One thing I wanted, before we get much further, is Mark's going to be giving a complimentary book, autographed book, to the 10th individual either calling in with a question or emailing in with a question, and I think we could probably start that whenever you want to.
Okay, we'll open the phone lines at 317-514-1106. We can open up that's phone lines, and also the email is f2f@innersights.com, and we'll start that.
Mark, thanks for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very nice. We do have a question that just came in. It came in prior that this person wants to know if you have any opinions on any extraterrestrial connection that comes along with Planet X.
Well, you know, I've heard the stories. I don't refer to them in my texts at all because, you know, I think the greatest concern we should have is, you know, the possible earth changes that can happen when these objects come through. But according to the ancient Sumerians, certainly Zachariah Sitchin's work from the 12th planet, that was published back in 1976, Zachariah Sitchin uncovered ancient Sumerian tablets and translated them. And so what he found out from their culture was they knew all about the nine planets in the solar system plus Planet X and, you know, how long their orbit took. But you know, I lost my train of thought right here. What was
about
jog my memory, please.
We're asking about any connection between extraterrestrials and planets.
Okay, all right. What he said, that this planet had large humanoids on it, giants, if you will, that have been referred to in you know, many cultures. Certainly the Bible refers to them as the Nephilim, I believe, or the gods that came from the sky, I'm not sure which. And from the Sumerian text, they stayed here for some 450,000 years or something like that. You know, these are kinds of stories that you can get, you know, a little bit of evidence here and there for, and if you're interested in them, you might actually come to see them as truth. I don't know, you know, that's not my subject area. You know, it's the object's effects on each other when they pass by that I think is where my focus lies.
Okay, but
as far as ETs go, you know, personally, I think ETs are everywhere. I mean, the whole solar system is full of what we call ETs. I mean, I remember working for a solar company back in, when I was 19, throughout my 20s, and at one point I was seeing a girl who worked for the same company, her name was Lisette, and 25 years later I hear she's written a couple books about her abduction experiences. Her name is Lisette Larkins now, and I mean, she finds these beings that she has had communication with really kind of spiritually awakened, and you know, mentors for us, not something to fear, which is what you mainly hear over the major media. So I have my own views on ETs, and I don't see them as evil or anything like that. I don't see them as particularly odd or something to even question as far as I'm concerned there. And let's get back to our own lives and worry about, you know, what's important to us. You know, the ETs, I guess, will take care of themselves.
So that when this planet comes by, do you think, wrapping up that subject, but do you think that in the past there's evidence for intervention by extraterrestrials and or spiritual beings to carry on life, earthlings, whatever, through these catastrophes?
Well, if you must be aware of, within the UFO community, there has been thousands of books written, and through there's a thread that goes through about, I don't know, at least a good 10% of them that mentions the up-and-coming Earth changes and helpful ETs getting ready for this event in one fashion or another. Like I said, these are the kind of things I don't discuss in my book, but I'll certainly discuss them with anyone who asks and on the radio. You know, I think that there's a possibility that some of us will be offered a way to avoid these calamities at the last minute, possibly by ETs helping, taking us off planet or taking us in planet where there may be some, you know, facilities built to help humanity go on. That doesn't mean all of us will, and how they make the decisions about who to pick and who to offer these rides to, if you will, I don't know. And this is just, you know, speculation and hearsay from what I've gotten from reading this kind of material. It's not anything that I really put in a book like Delicate Earth, which is just, kind of rather.
You know, what's funny is recently, this is, well, not even so much recently, but I would say in the last 2-3 years, there's been a tremendous amount in the abductions. There's more communication. And these are people who have first-time experiences, or they're getting messages, I would say. But a lot of them have to do with calamities. A lot of them have to do with earth changes. And one aspect, as far as dreams, and this is so funny, and you had mentioned it actually, that a lot of people are starting to get visions or dreams. Well, I had about 3 recently about tidal waves, so these huge waves. And the funny thing about it is many people are getting these images in their head. Now, is it because it's just because we're reading this stuff or we're doing, research on this? Who knows? Of course, there's a subliminal suggestion, but some of these people, it's like not even in their realm of what they talk about. So who knows? Maybe there's something coming through.
The United States government has admitted to performing what they call remote viewing experiments. Are you familiar with the term remote viewing?
Intimately.
Okay. The fact that they admitted that is very interesting because...
Let's go into it. We're going to go for a break here. We'll come right up back into remote viewing.
Okay.
And we're talking about Planet X, planetxinbound.com. Mark Hazelwood, Sam Rantel. We'll be right back after this break. I was just checking an email there for questions, and one of the things I got, I thought it was you read something real quick, and I said, wait, is that a question? I'm talking about some large bell coming from the other room. What is it? You know, and it was just one of those sucker things to wait for the picture to be fully loaded, so I got nailed. Anyway, we're live, back to Feet to Fire. I'm your host, James Arthur Yanchik. We have Sam Marantel on the line and our special guest today, Mark Hazelwood, talking about PlanetXInbound.com and his 2 books. Mark and Sam, hey.
Well, we're back here, and we had a good time, as usual, talking on the breaks. One interesting point is the remote viewing that was done actually by Dames. Ed Dames, he was doing some remote viewing. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, he certainly has asked a group of people, I think from all ages, to remote view this, and they all see this thing coming in their lifetime. Even the the elderly of his group. But that's not the reason why I mentioned remote viewing. Jim mentioned tidal wave dreams, so it made me think about remote viewing. Because here the government has admitted using remote viewing. And if you understand anything about remote viewing, you'll know it is them, these government-hired personnel, tapping into a collective unconscious. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
If there is a collective unconscious they're tapping into, then it works both ways. In other words, if we can tap into this collective to get information that we want, the collective can also get through to us and feed us dreams or give us warnings. And the reason, one of the major reasons why I started to write my first book is because my son and I had simultaneous earth change tidal wave dreams being in Central Florida. He had the dream first. He got away from one tidal wave with comic book superhero powers. And he was in downtown Orlando, and he saw this UFO at the time. Within 2 days, I had a similar dream, except mine was a little different, a little disconcerting is what it was. I had the same comic book superhero powers. I was getting away from the first tidal wave, going a specific direction directly away from it, only to be met by one coming in from the direction I was getting away from the first one. Hmm. Where could that happen? On a peninsula where we lived. At that point, I decided I wanted to know. I wanted to know why I was having, this was having, happening to me, my son and I at the same time. To me, it was a sign. So I started digging around and doing research, and I found out. And this is what led to writing the first book. These dreams did it to me. I wouldn't have been fired up, so to speak. I wouldn't have had that fire underneath my feet to do this if it weren't for those original dreams by my son and I.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I wanted to mention the remote viewing. I mean, they're virtually admitting to the knowledge of a collective unconscious that can, well, if you can tap into it, it can certainly tap into all of us if we create the collective together.
I'm looking in on your lists here for the book, and I, like you're saying, all your evidence seems to be based on, like, written in the past, archaeological evidence in the past, evidence from telescopes and people in the military and so on. It's all very evidential related rather than getting revelation.
Well, the first book I had a section for prophecy. You know, having been aware that there were thousands of different, you know, prophetic utterances from different people, I chose, you know, like 17 of the most popular, and I put them in a section of the book. But I realized that the people that are opposing this information use prophecy to discredit it. So having realized that, my second book, Delicate Earth, I decided to make this book appeal to our Western conscious and only give the facts, as you would say in that old Dragnet series, the facts, man, that's it. So, the science and the history speaks for itself along with the insider disclosures and pretty much makes the case completely without me having to do anything to organize what these other people that are very good at what they do did as far as research goes. I wanted to make it very credible for, you know, the entire population. I mean, whoever you are from whatever walk of life, if you're not leaning towards the paranormal at all, you will understand the reality of this situation at the end of this book from, you know, the array of different sources that it comes from. And you won't question it because there is a section that talks about prophecy. No, I carved that out for the second book and only dealt with the hardcore evidence.
So I'd remind people to get their questions and try to get them in for the end of this break. And that's feet, F2F at intersites.com or 317-514-1106. And you can use one of the chat systems, too, if you like. I'll just keep track of that. And I'm noticing on this list, you say that Zachariah Sitchin privately knows the time for Planet X, and yet he's gone on record publicly. At least I've seen a little video clip, which him saying it's not coming back now.
Well, yeah, there was a time where he spoke more openly about what he knows during his speeches to the public. And then when I brought my book out and got on the Art Bell show a couple years back, it seemed like interest picked up quite a bit. And I believe he had a talking to by his handler, so to speak, that he mustn't speak about what he knows. So now he actually says what he knows is not true, that he doesn't know. But many people have contacted me stating that they heard him say this and that and the other, and that he does know, and they remember it, and they give the dates and times they attended his lecture in the small groups of, you know, after the lecture that they got into discussion with him and what they heard. But publicly now he's saying the opposite, which is, you know, part of, I guess, what he's having to say in order to continue to conduct business. And I think he's under pressure, really.
When do you think you may get that phone call or that visit?
When, say that again?
When do you think you may get that phone call or
visit?
It
won't come. It won't come to me. I'm not under anyone's thumb.
Oh, I see.
And they know that if they do that to me, the first thing I'll do is broadcast it. I'm what you call a loose cannon. And they know it.
It's
so that phone call
blood, right?
Never come.
It's in the blood, right?
I have a question coming in here. Does he feel, is it's reading that, that these dreams may have been a form in which some of this material or ideas from your books were planted?
Planted?
Inspiration might be a better term.
Planted. I like that. I like that idea. That would be a question that that would come from someone who wants to discount the information in some way. So they use the word planted. It's amusing to listen to these kinds of things when they come up. It makes me smile. It makes me know that I'm on the right track. The fact that any kind of discounting needs to be done. That means there is a certain amount of success that the people that are running the opposite campaign that I am are worried about. I would like to see the truth put out, and they would like to see it quashed. There's nothing even planted in my brain. I simply stumble on this information. Like I said, first interest was back as a child reading Edgar Casey, and then after these dreams, there was a real interest that was fired up, so I did my research and found out what now anyone can easily find out. You don't have to do all the work that has been done. It's been done for you now. And once you'll read it, whether you believe in the paranormal or not, you'll know the situation is real. We live in the wilds of the solar system. These extrasolar objects come in on a regular basis and wreak havoc with the planet's surfaces of the solar system. That's just the way it works. And we have this one regular one that comes in every 3,650 years or so. And that's just the way it is. I mean, it's not so, it doesn't necessarily tie into the paranormal, even though it seems like the people who are interested in paranormal are more interested in it than the rest of the population at this point. I hope to make a change in that situation, which is what frightens the people that are behind this campaign to quash this information.
I think the book and the aspect of the book being more along the line of the scientific and the
historical, the modern discourse.
I mean, that's I can't reiterate the book enough. I mean, it's very well written. It spells it out. By the time you get done reading this, if you have any doubt of the validity of this object, then you obviously didn't read.
And it's not just one scientist stating it. It's everywhere you turn, from all the best of the best that have looked at this situation.
There's a good point here you have in this list that I've mentioned a few times, the full point reduction in earthquake Richter scale, that when you hear of an earthquake of being 5.0, it used to be 6.0, but they've reduced it. And I'm wondering what your opinion on why that was done.
Well, I would say that the people who did that, they actually waited for Mr. Richter to die and were a little impatient about it before they did it. They didn't want to do it while he was alive. But they certainly knew that the uptick in quakes at this time would be unprecedented. So not only did they lower the Richter scale, they lowered all the scales of storms and hurricanes and tornadoes. All the scales have been reduced, so it looks like things are relatively normal. Even though they still take earthquakes that happen and they're shown on the automatic systems and then hide them afterwards, left and right, all over the place, they're engaged in censoring earthquake information and still lowering the Richter scale quakes that they know of. The quakes that are happening now, that they're already reduced by a point. They reduced them more sometimes just to try to cover up the fact that, I mean, towards the late last year, there were 3 8-point-plus earthquakes. One of those should happen every 5 years, but, you know, they took the one that happened in Japan that they admitted to. One happened 12 minutes later. They ignored that one and wouldn't report it. And then within a couple weeks, another one happened in Siberia that the Russians reported and wrote articles about. And then finally the USGS mentioned the one in Siberia and said, oh, well, it was only 7.5 or instead of 8.5. And certainly the Yellowstone situation, if you're aware of that supervolcano there now, they just recently had another earthquake of 5.3 there that they quashed. They covered it up, and when they asked about it, they gave some story about, well, we didn't report that one because it was a mine shaft collapsing or something like that. But if you know anything about that situation, you'll know that it would never have been so high. I mean, that may have been a 2.5 if it had anything to do with a mine shaft blast or a collapse. So it's funny, if you're right on top of the situation like I am, or if you go on my website and want to get updates, which I put out, I mean, you see this over and over and over again, and you don't even question it. You just go, okay, well, they're doing it again. It's the same way with SOHO. I mean, the satellite that looks at the sun always goes down whenever a major solar flare starts or when it sees a comet coming that's going to impact the sun. I mean, as soon as they can, when something, you know, obvious that's going to happen, a major solar flare caused by a passing comet or an impact, they'll turn the thing off and give some excuse, or not give any excuse at all, and just silently, on a regular basis, hours of these, what should be, you know, a constant stream of information from the satellite looking at the sun is just turned off. And sometimes they come back with pictures that are, they're outdated from different dates that are turned upside down. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, these people are engaged in a massive cover-up from the major media to these sophisticated equipment that's used to look at the sun or measure earthquakes. I mean, the whole thing is being coordinated by from above, so to speak. Okay. And some of these people are kind of uncomfortable with what they're doing. You can kind of understand that with, you know, these people that are just, you know, they're doing their jobs working for these agencies, and they're being told not to say anything. You can sense sometimes that between the lines their discomfort from what they're doing and what they're saying is a little different than what they know.
Now, if they've seen this Planet X in 1983 here to NASA,
yeah.
I'm not trying to pull dates out. I understand that. But, boy, somebody's got to have a clue that, you know, give or take, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, a decade. I mean, it's got to be, I would assume it's going to be within the next decade. I mean, how slow can it be coming in and yet be seen?
Yeah, well, the latest is there are reports of thousands of astronomers going down to the southern hemisphere coming back and not reporting what they've seen. So that could be some indication that the big guy has been seen and is coming, and they just want to look at it before it happens.
Get one last chance to use a technical telescope before it gets,
before they can't see a thing.
Yeah, and go back. And it's very interesting that when we do have these Stone Age type accomplishments, like how they made astronomically Stonehenge and so forth, it could very well be that there was a sophisticated civilization that was knocked backwards. They still had knowledge, but they lost their technical skills, used their knowledge, which could explain why relatively, supposedly, uneducated civilizations seem to do pretty cool things.
Well, from my understanding, and I put this in my new book, Delicate Earth, there were at least a dozen different highly sophisticated civilizations that were here prior to us, that the history we've been taught is totally wrong. That, in fact, our civilization isn't even the best or the greatest so far. That there was one 3 passages ago that went down that we refer to as Atlantis that was in many ways far surpassed our civilization. And there's many artifacts and different, what is known as forbidden archaeology nowadays that is kind of seeping up through the minor media, let me say. That would be us here on the radio, not in the major media yet, that is pointing out these facts that there's just so much, so many different things that, inside of the pyramids there were pictures of what we would call helicopters and jet planes with the wings that were slanted back. I mean, these are supposedly thousands of years old. There's batteries that they've found. I mean, I'm just scratching the surface here.
I wish they had I wish I can go to a museum and see like a cell phone from 6,000 years ago or something.
Well, I don't know that they had that technology. You know, they had a different society. They probably excelled in different areas.
Now, what you'll see is a credit card bill. It probably went back in time, you know. They figure it'll go to the future. They'll figure something out where they could, bring it to your next life. You could still pay in the darn thing, so.
But if they had crystal technology that was in tune with the Earth, which is a different frequency many thousand years ago, we could find those very tools, and it would look like rubbish. It'd look like artifacts because we wouldn't realize, because of some of that technology, that they just won't work anymore. I mean, it's just a theory.
Well, anything made out of metal would probably deteriorate to such a point that you wouldn't be able to understand it. The other thing is, if you were to look at the technology we use today, if it were to be separated by cataclysms and and beaten up and decomposed, would we understand what it is, just knowing what it is? You know, what we do now. When you go to let's say sites for a crime or something, they have to really assemble a lot of things, and that's current. Can you imagine if it's thousands of years or hundreds of thousands of years?
Yeah, this Planet X subject really does touch on a lot of other interesting things. It's one reason why I like it.
All inclusive.
Yeah,
it hits all the astronomy, every field of science, theology. It crosses over everything.
Yeah, it does.
Well,
I think, isn't it? When you look at even what's going on today politically, the different the political arena, wars, are the wars a ruse for distraction? Terrorism, is this a ruse for distraction? You start to question things when you put this into a different equation.
It is kind of funny that we don't see the vice president anymore. I mean, I do find that kind of humorous. He's just away somewhere, protected.
Well, they have mentioned this underground government. They actually mentioned it in the major media last year for the first time.
The shadow, I think they called it.
The shadow government, that was it.
Hmm. Right.
And the underground facilities that they've dug to house them.
All right, we got what's your questions for Mark and about his opinions on his things in his book. Planet X Inbound is the website, .com, Delicate Earth. And Blindsided, the two books. We'll be right back with the final segment. Going into the final segment, the website is planetxinbound.com. The book is Delicate Planet, brand new book written by Mark Hazelwood. Just coming out today, I believe. Isn't it true? It's just coming out?
Yeah, just within the last 3 weeks.
Brand new. And you can buy it right from the website, so you don't have to go hunting around. And if you want, you can go in there, and that's what I was looking through here, was the actual table of contents gives you a lot of little information, both like teasers or kind of interest you. It's like, oh, the ancient underwater ruins and how that would tie in with X and so forth. It's very interesting, to say the least. And what were you and Sam cooking up when we were on break there?
Well, we just decided to go to the Soho site while we're talking, and it looks like we may have a comet coming in as we speak going past the sun.
Wow.
Now, let's see in the next segment on this thing if there's a solar flare.
From what direction did it come in?
I guess.
Southern hemisphere.
The southern hemisphere, and it looked like there was two more other ones smaller that went buzzing past. But
that's pretty good, huh?
Activity. Tons of activity in the southern hemisphere, let's put it that way. In fact, how many were there that McKinney was saying there was, as far as within a short period of time, there was something like 200 of them came in within a very short period of time, which was way out of whack.
Well, he states that it's statistically impossible for this many objects to be coming in from one direction if it wasn't heralding in a much larger object, quote unquote.
Yeah, it would definitely be. It'd be like lottery material here. I mean, the odds are so high that just so happens there's a pocket of comets coming the same way. What's keeping them there? You know, I mean, there's got to be other explanations. Now, it doesn't mean. What I like is all these things point to a reasonable common explanation, which would be a heavy body, moving toward the Earth.
Right. The thing is, if you take any one of these, let's take one of the disciplines, and Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is how I review it. This is how I've always looked at it. You could take any one of the scenarios and discount it. But when you take everything in, the archaeology, geology, astronomy, astrophysics, meteorological, seismic activity, Vulcan activity, and we're not talking from Star Trek either, on and on and on and on, when you put them all together, lay it all out.
There's no question.
There is none. Plus the fact that they spotted the darn thing, that they actually, you know,
now, if you go on the Internet, you're going to find all kinds of sites that attack this information in piecemeal fashion. Because if you were to attack all of the information all at once, you'd make the case.
Yes. That's it. You'd make the case.
Never before in history has the sun been this violent. Now, sure, I remember listening to an individual. I wish I would have got his name. I'd love to give him a call back. But he was on a coast-to-coast talking about, well, we had this huge X-flare, and, well, you know, it never happened in recorded history. Well, one good thing is we got that one out of the way. It's never going to happen again. Meanwhile, one bigger came later. and he was one of the people studying these things, one of the mainstream scientists, we'll say. You know, so, I mean, now how do you explain that one? And how do you explain a bigger one? And how do you explain the sun reacting to a comet as it came past it by sending out a flare at it? That's amazing.
They call it coincidence.
Coincidence.
It happens every time, though.
Well,
gosh.
This is where they poo-pooed Velikovsky for coming up with the electrical charge. In other words, there is no electricity in outer space.
Yeah, right.
You know, and this is where they discounted the poor guy, and he was correct. The thing is, he was right, they were wrong, you know, but so much for that. And McKinney today, his version of what is science, or as he refers to it, his science, and it is. I mean, this is where he's done his work, and it's being accepted in other countries, and you know, quietly being accepted in here, in this country. But you go to Russia or someplace else, his books are known in academia.
Well, there are other scientists that I've gotten some of their research and put it in the text that just go right along with what McKinney is saying and parallels his research. So he's not the only one out there, and that's the point of this book. I mean, you can dig and find this information. It's just if you were to do it on your own, it would be a little difficult to find. But there's been a lot of good researchers now, just in the last couple of years since the subject matter has gained in popularity, that have pulled together this stuff. And I've simply stepped up to the position executive researcher, looked at all the research, and put it all in one text. So there's no doubt.
All right, we have a question coming in. This is more of a technical question. Okay, there's a lot of comets coming out of the south, and it's been statistically not... it's not normal to have that many.
Right.
The twofold question is, what would be a normal amount that would come in any given, two months, 4 months, whatever? And also, why would, and this is the person asking, why would these things be around a planet X?
Well, it brings in with it, it is a, what you call a dwarf or a failed star. Kind of a larger planet, and it brings with it its entire solar system of other objects. I mean, it is large enough, so it attracts all this debris, all these other objects that travel in and around it. So it's very much like another sun, except for it's large enough to be the size of our sun, but it's not ignited either. But it has the same gravitational weight and pull to attract all these other objects. So that's why you have objects coming in ahead of time and behind it, because they are orbiting this object or being influenced by it enough to drag them and push them along with it. As far as the exact number, I don't know if anyone has that information. What is the average number of comets that are coming up? I mean, how long have we had the kind of equipment we've had that can count these things? Is anyone counting out there? I don't know if there's an answer to that question.
Plus, I mean, another thing notable is that this group and these things are coming consistently from the south, which is you're narrowing one section of the sky where it can come from. So it raises questions at the very least.
Yeah, just that one piece of information, then combine the rest.
So we do have, I think, enough evidence to say, hey, let's look. Now, if we were to go to the powers that be, we the people, and say, look, we hear these guys talking about Planet X. We want you to turn the Hubble over where they say it is and check it out. I would imagine that they're going to say no.
Not only that, they would try to... make you look silly. They would stonewall you. Mainly they use silence. You know, I had a guy call me about a year and a half ago out of the blue. He said, you know, I just want to let you know what I know about the situation. He simply was, you know, worked for the military. He was a guard back in the 80s. Young guy, scientific minded and interested, but he was happened to be stationed on Guam, you know, on the other side of the world. And at one point during the summer of 1983, this was 6 months before they announced it with the IRAS satellite having found it, he said an airship, a C-141 Starlifter is what he called it. It was custom converted over to Airborne Observatory with a NASA logo on it. It landed, there was 300 people that accompanied that airship, and he got really excited about it. That, you know, you know, all summer long he had just been kind of stationed out there. All of a sudden this NASA ship lands there. And apparently there was a three foot diameter infrared telescope mounted in the front of the thing and a small window in the front of it. And it was a kind of plane that could take off straight from the runway and land straight down. And it could hover for up to 4 hours at a time, well above the atmosphere, 85% of the atmosphere, and aim in any direction and sit there for 3 or 4 hours. So, you know, he got very curious and asked the personnel there what the hell they were doing. He said, well, we're taking pictures of planet X. We have a 3-hour window of opportunity every 24 hours to do so. So the ship came and went for those 3 days and then left, and he kept his eye on the news thinking that, okay, well, these guys are going to announce this at one point, and sure enough, 6 months later they did, but from a totally different technological venue. It was these satellites they announced having found it from. They never mentioned the C-141 custom airship that these guys were photographing it from. So this is the kind of disclosures and insider information that's been passed to me that adds to the entire weight of the situation. I mean, this guy was just a regular guy. He was in his 40s now. He's long since left the military. He just wanted to let me know what he knew personally about the situation.
Well, when you start adding things up, it's something that's worth looking at. And I think that your book does well, and I just can't wait to read it and so forth. And Sam, I know you got a bunch of things there.
You know, one thing to mention is the why would the Vatican want an observatory? Well, question one. Question two is, Molokai Martin, when he was asked as far as the validity of this, he stated what, and what was his input?
Well, you were talking about Molokai Martin being on the Art Bell show back in 1997, mm-hmm. before his untimely death. And he simply stated that what is coming is should be... Well, he was very careful what he said. He expected to cause millions of deaths. Actually, it could be billions. And it should be of, I think he used the word, of import. Kind of a strange word to use. Of import. It could be of great import in the next 5 to 10 years. That was 1997, so that would be between the years 2002 and 2007. He also discussed the fact that the Vatican had an observatory on Mount Graham. Where is Mount Graham? Is that Arizona? Yeah, Arizona. But there's also another man who contacted me who said there's a completely separate observatory that was built, owned by the Vatican. In fact, he gave the work order that had the Vatican name in it, and he had worked on it as a contractor. Signed all these non-disclosure documents that he never read, and then let me know about it. And when he went to when he found out about Planet X and went to try to find it later on, it turns out there are no roads to it. And when he contacted the local sheriff department, he said, well, there's only a couple of observatories around here. He says, well, I worked on one. I helped build one. And then he heard silence for a while, and he says, well, that's military, and no one goes up there. So there is another one that's not widely known that is built that doesn't have any roads to it that the Vatican owns. It's not just the one in Mount Graham that everyone knows about. So they built these things because, you know, they have miles and miles of archives of ancient texts and documents, and they certainly are fully aware of the situation and what the ancient people wrote and the evidence they left that they have in their possession that they're not letting the public know about. And that's why they ask about the Hale-Bopp. They thought it might have been wormwood, but that was just one of the the entourage of objects that come prior to the wormwood that they are waiting for that ties into, I guess, Revelations.
So Planet X is...
And the third secret of Fatima.
Planet X...
Oh, yeah, get into that.
...is actually going to be a comet, then.
Say what?
Planet X is actually going to be a comet, then. Comet-looking.
Well, any large object that enters into the solar field immediately develops a negative charge because of the way the solar field works. I couldn't explain it. I'm not up on how to explain it like Professor McKinney is. And this negative charge the objects develop pull in the debris that's hanging in the balance, and that is what forms the tail. So at that point, instead of calling it an asteroid or a planet, we call it a comet because it suddenly has this tail. But that tail is simply the debris that does not end up on the surface, that falls on the surface of these objects that it pulls in because of the negative charge. And it's this negative charge and this tail that causes it to act erratically as far as the speed goes. I mean, if you can imagine, you know, if you have this negative charge in this giant electrical field, it would have a, I guess on occasion it would have a dampening effect, and then how it would suddenly speed up, I don't know, because these objects are known to do both within the field. But these objects are not snowballs that are passing through the solar system, which is completely ridiculous, is what the astronomical community still says about these objects. They're actually dirty snowballs or something. I mean, that's ridiculous. Actually, some of the larger ones are building planets because a lot of this debris is pulled in and actually settles on the surface, and they grow. They get larger. Hale-Bopp was said to have grown quite a bit during its run through the solar system this last time. The diameter, which what NASA will not talk about. So, you know, these are possible future planets of the solar system as they come through. They develop this charge. The debris pulls in. A lot of the debris doesn't settle on the surface, forms the tail, but some of it does, and these objects get larger, and eventually they get captured by one of the larger objects, you know, either Saturn or the Sun, and become a new planet within our solar system. And that's how the solar system continues to change and evolve and work. Not how these antiquated textbooks that are still taught in the universities of our highest scholarly institutions still state. I mean, it's just ridiculous that this knowledge they keep repeating that is incorrect.
Well, we got about
obviously so if you study, you know, the instruments that are available today, certainly looking through SOHO.
We got about a minute or so before we start to walk out. So, Sam, did you want to finish on something that you were saying there about Fatima?
Oh, well, I can give you a little bit about what Pope John Paul II said back in November of 1980. He said this publicly to a German magazine called Stimme des Globens. I'm not pronouncing that right. But he was speaking to a group of German Catholics, and they questioned him about the third secret of Fatima. And this is in my book, and he said, "It should be sufficient for all Christians to know this much. If there is a message in which it is said that the oceans will flood entire sections of the earth, that from one moment to the other, millions of people will perish, there's no longer any point in really wanting to publish this secret message. Many want to know merely out of curiosity or because of their taste for sensationalism, but they forget that to know implies for them a responsibility. It is dangerous to want to satisfy one's curiosity only. If one is convinced that we can do nothing against the catastrophe that has been predicted." So that was his quote. And that pretty much spills the beans and shows that the secret that they said wasn't I mean, the one that came out with, I think, in 1990, that was just a cover-up. I mean, this Pope let the cat out of the bag in 1980 and just was widely known that he had done so.
Well, that's a good note to end it on.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's no, excellent. It's excellent, and it's to me, he came out and just said it. I mean, you can't get much more plain than that other than saying yes. He's very eloquent. I read some of his books, so that's good enough for me. Mark, thank you very much for coming here.
And again, thank you for having me on.
That's PlanetXInbound.com. Sam, final word?
Well, stay tuned next week. We're going to take the subject on and on. I guess this is the X month, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is.
The X generation is my son's generation.
Hey, that's pretty interesting. Just so happens where we are in the X generation. Generation X, Planet X. Well, here we go. Thanks a lot, guys.
You're welcome.
We'll be back next week to another Walking into the Unknown, X-Mania. Well, it's funny, but it's not funny, but it's fascinating. We'll see you later.